it's Friday, the 23rd of February. I'm Miranda Sawyer, and it must be my turn to be speaker now. Welcome back to Papercuts, the modern newspaper review, where we put all of the UK papers into a reason room with a group of MPs and let them get on with it. Once the blood has dried, we gather at the shredded bits and stick them all together to make the best newspaper ever. And we'd like to say a big thank you to all of you who've joined our fabulous Papercut Supporters Club. Your generosity is allowing us to continue our plucky indie battle with nasty big media. And be assured, we spend your money wisely on settling our large newspaper bill, on paying our keen young producers, and on keeping Fergus Craig in what his invoice says is fruit and flowers. And if you too would like to get ad-free episodes, a special extra funny bit, maybe even a Papercuts mug or a t-shirt, then why not rush to the show notes and click on back.papercutsshow.com to see how you too can become a Papercut supporter. Now, here are the headlines for today's show. Are you quite sure you're okay? Liz Truss and Suella Braverman lose the plot again. Who let the dog out? Joe Biden's German Shepherd causes havoc. And do you believe in life after love? Elsina and Tom are over, a source reveals, and at least one of us is heartbroken. Welcome to Papercuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Papercuts, where we've got the headline and the pap shot. We're just waiting for an actual story. I'm Miranda Sawyer, and joining me today is host of The Bunker and proud owner of Cheese. That's a dog. It's Jacob Jarvis. Hi, Jarv.
Morning, Miranda. My dog's name is very stupid, isn't it?
And also with us is comedian and proud eater of cheese. That's not the dog. It's Fergus Craig. Hi, Ferg.
Hi, guys.
So what have we got on the front pages today? What do you have, Jarvis?
The Eye has some quite good news, potentially, but slightly boring standing news, as The Eye generally is. But new Brexit deal on food and cars could be agreed with Labour, say EU officials. So if Keir Starmer wins the general election, which, let's not jinx it, but it looks like could happen, the EU will offer Labour a chance to reset trade arrangements with the bloc there. So that's some good news.
Yeah.
Then on The Times, fake tears and tricks of the charity fundraisers. So this is quite a strange one about people trying to secure donations for Great Ormond Street Hospital, being taught how they can guilt people into giving money. But there's this bloke who apparently is saying he can cry on cue and do that, which I don't know. I mean, if a fundraiser came to my door and just started crying, I don't know if it would convince me. I feel like I'd be very alarmed and worried for them, but I don't think I'd immediately go, I feel so bad, I'm going to sign up. But yeah, some pretty dodgy tactics, but for a good cause.
I think that's what I thought. But it's for Great Ormond Street, to be honest. You know, they could just lie on the floor going, give money for sick kids. And I kind of go, that's fair enough.
Then they've also got Parliament can't bend to intimidation, warned Sunak. So this is around the chaos that came over the votes around a ceasefire. And I'm sure we'll return more to that later in the show to discuss. The Guardian has the headline, which could just be going to the doctor is good for you, which is seeing same GP each visit cuts workloads and improves health.
Can we just say, duh?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, at the moment, if you can get to see your GP is one thing, getting to see a regular one, I don't know my GP's name. Whenever you get asked that on a form, I think,
yeah,
I fucking know the person who they put me in front of. So, yeah, that's a story. And then they've got a very sad story of family mourn boy shot by IDF. And that's touching on the horrific situation over in the Middle East. And then the Daily Telegraph has at the top the great menopause debate. Are we right to class a woman's midlife as a period of disability in their features?
Let's ignore that.
Yeah. That's
speaking as a middle-aged
woman.
Yeah,
okay. I'll defer to you on that one. And then they've got, I have the Russian soldiers in my sights, but no shells to fire at them. And they've got a dispatch from Ukraine as it's coming up to 2 years since Russia invaded Ukraine.
Mm. So all quite glum, I'm afraid. So let's go to the tabloids. What do you have, Ferg?
More glum initially, I'm afraid. I've got the Daily Mail. Outrage as genocide message is beamed on Big Ben. Somebody beamed the phrase from the river to the sea onto Big Ben, which is, of course, considered a hate slogan by many Jews. The Sun has the story of, I don't know how much you've been following the ups and downs of Elle Goulding's marriage, but...
Ellie.
Is it Ellie Goulding?
Yeah.
Well, clearly, I haven't been following it as much as I should do.
She was married to a posh guy. That's why they're interested.
Aren't they all? Mm. Aren't they all? Married Ellie and her surf hunk. There are pictures with her and a surf instructor in Costa Rica, confirming, I guess, it says here that the marriage is no longer intact. But if, you know, if you're going to rebound...
Yeah.
A surf instructor in Costa Rica is not the worst way to go, I'd imagine.
not from personal experience.
Not from personal experience. The Daily Mirror has the story of an OAP who was jailed for smuggling £1 million of cocaine on a cruise ship. And he's spoken out for the first time. My regrets. That's the headline, my regrets.
The interview was conducted in a kitchen at 4 a.m. as well.
He says that he was just carrying a suitcase for a friend. He says, I can understand why people don't believe me. I blame myself. I should have checked. My stupidity caused this. We've all done it. The Daily Star has the story of Joe Biden's dog. Sleepy Joe Biden's dog bit Secret Service team 24 times in 9 months. And the headline is, Rough Justice.
Yeah, we love it.
Now, there are a few different stories about politicians on the front page today, surprise, that we've decided to group under our own headline. And that headline is, Politicians Are Bananas. So, Jav, let's start with Politicians Are Bananas, part one. Okay. We're starting with Liz Truss, right?
Liz Truss was so shit as Prime Minister that she's invented a conspiracy theory to explain that, okay. Is essentially what seems to have happened. So she is over at CPAC, which is this big conservative conference in America. Trump's there, Farage is kicking about, you know, a lot of the worst people in the world get into one place and talk about bollocks, really, for the most part. And her particular brand of bollocks has been claiming that the civil service has been infiltrated by extremists. So she talks about trans activists and environmental extremists kicking out the civil service, and it all been this kind of deep state thing. And she actually said there at the thing, she said that it's like, you have the deep state, we have quangos and these all these different groups in the UK keeping the conservative brand and message and plan down. So she's essentially, to be honest, talked quite a lot of rubbish. She also slagged off Joe Biden and said that he was a weak leader, which for someone who, you know, ran the country for only 45 days before getting ousted by her own party for being so terrible is probably not really the smartest thing to say.
Yeah, it also seems quite weird to me. So basically what she's saying is that Britain is run by people who are really woke. That's what she's saying. Britain is run by people who are really woke. But the people who are in charge of the country are the Tories. That's what I don't really understand.
Yeah,
what she's saying.
She was very much in charge. And the people who really seemed to bring her down was the financial markets who I would say are not really woke left-wing commie activists, as far as I know, you know. But she hasn't really got as much attention as she probably hoped for. The Telegraph has got a good chunk about it online, and then the Mail has a very little sort of sidebar story here, and there's a couple of places about it. But the Star, thankfully, which we can always trust, is that the Star really is the paper that seems to be getting the tone of everything at the moment. And they have said, Lettuce Liz, I didn't get us in state. But yeah, they've just taken the piss, thankfully, which is quite good. And they've quoted Diane Abbott, who pointed out that, you know, she crashed the economy, sparking a mortgage market meltdown. And, you know, it was kind of her idiocy around the economy that actually screwed up. Essentially, she's gone too far to be accepted by British conservatives. So she's gone, maybe the Americans might be weird enough to think that I'm cool.
Tennis historians will remember that Björn Borg.
Yeah.
Won Wimbledon 5 times in a row,
yeah,
okay. And then lost and disappeared for 30 years because of the shame of it.
Yeah.
Liz Truss had the worst prime ministership in living memory, in all of history, but she won't go away. The confidence of that woman is extraordinary. I'm fascinated by her.
Yeah, she is kind of amazing. There is that thing where you feel like she's a little bit like one of those people that goes on The Apprentice. Do you know what I mean? They're just like, she wears a similar thing, her hair's similar, and she's just constantly confident even though everything's falling around her.
Well, she's got two things going on, hasn't she? Because she's so awkward. She's not outwardly confident, but her actions suggest unbelievable confidence, right? So there's two things going on there. It's odd to see her in America in CPAC trying to find her audience. It's a bit like sort of, it's like 50 Cent being in Emmerdale.
Or the other way around. It's like somebody from Emmerdale going to like a hip-hop gig.
But it's like 50 Cent is like, well, yes, you do a bit of acting, I understand, but this is probably the wrong place for you to make your career. It just doesn't fit quite. I get why you want to do it. It just doesn't quite fit.
Yeah. So look, we've also got Politicians Are Bananas Part 2, haven't we? And this is Suella Braverman. She's back.
So Parliament this week and the Commons, I would say, hasn't exactly covered itself in glory. There was a whole vote over a ceasefire, which kind of just descended into being about politics and brinkmanship between different political parties, and now is resulting in pressure against the Speaker, when realistically the vote should have been about what it was about, was that there are people really horrifically suffering now because of that. So a large part around it was how Speaker Lindsay Hall broke convention to take on this Labour amendment, which he said was to do with the concerns around the safety of MPs, because this is clearly an issue where a lot of people are very angry and very upset, and there's a lot of protest around it, and some MPs had felt unsafe due to the sort of backlash they could get around whatever way they were to vote on these things. But Keir Starmer had a meeting with Lindsay Hall in the Reason Room. John Elledge explained this on the podcast yesterday, probably much better than I am. So people go back and listen to that if you haven't, because he's smarter than me. But it's all been spoken about now as if that Labour and Lindsay Hall buckled to pressure of extreme people within the protest groups. And so what Braverman is saying, which is a surprise to me, is that Islamists are now in charge of Britain, Suella Braverman has said, which is strange because I thought the Conservatives hadn't held an election yet, despite people wanting, and I thought they were still in charge. But apparently, according to her, they are not. So she's criticised police for playing favourites with pro-Palestine protesters and accuses Keir Starmer of being in hock to the extremists and taking the Speaker hostage with a grubby backroom deal over the Labour amendment.
It's really, really loaded language, isn't it? It's very like... I read the piece and I thought, God, it's really quite extreme. It is quite bananas.
Well, it's this doom spiral of fucking hypocrisy from these people of going, you played politics and now I'm going to play politics over how you were playing politics to fund my narrative agenda. And this whole, it kind of goes into the culture war, which is a phrase I don't like to say because it shouldn't really exist.
I'm just going to quote what she says, right? Because it's so mad. We are sleepwalking into a ghettoised society where free expression and British values are diluted, where Sharia law, the Islamist mob and anti-Semites take over communities. This is a crisis and the fight back must start now with urgency. I mean, it's awful.
The thing is also criticising a group for being sort of considering them violent and then saying we must launch a fight back.
It's just awful.
And this language, it's just, it's a lot of horrible shit.
Now, on the front of the Star, proud to love animals, are two doggo stories. One is the sad tale of Bobby, who died believing he was the oldest dog in the world and was given a Guinness Book of Records award posthumously to say that, yes, he was, but he wasn't, sadly, because he was clearly two different dogs. The other story is about Commander, Joe Biden's German Shepherd dog. Ferg, what has Commander been up to?
Commander is, yes, as you say, Joe Biden's dog. It was given to Joe Biden by his brother in December 2021, but it bit Secret Service agents at least 24 times between October 22nd and July 23rd, which is coincidentally my birthday, and has now left in disgrace.
Mm. It's serious. Yeah. It's really serious. These are big. And also, it's the agents that he's biting, which I think is quite weird. So it's like they're there to protect Joe Biden, but the dog is like, no, 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 you're attacking my owner, so I will bite you. So it's, I mean, it's chaos.
Well, we all get to that stage of life, you know, it's time to put him down. And I am talking about the president. I mean, this, it is mental. I mean, one, you have to ask, if it was given to him by his brother, there are already questions about the connections and motivations of some people in the Biden family. Who is Joe Biden's brother working for? What is going on?
Has anyone looked at the dog's laptop?
There's 400 pages of a report about this dog, you know. 400 pages.
So the dog is still alive.
Yeah.
But where is the dog right now?
It's with... Well, it's
is it in the studio? Is it in the studio now?
It's been shipped out to suppose... Well, they didn't say for ages, and then a bit of digging said to a family member. So maybe he sent it back to the brother. But we don't know. It might be in a correctional facility for all we know. We just really don't know. Some of the details are quite dark, aren't they?
Yeah, well, there was this one detail in the Star, I think it was, that I saw where... There was a tour of the White House happening and there was so much blood because of an attack from this dog that they had to say, hey, can we go another way? Like, no, you do not, you don't want to look at the Oval Office. It's shit. It's not as impressive as you'd imagine. Come, we've got this cupboard you can look at that's blood free. Come look there. So yeah, it's strange. I mean, the Eye has done a deep dive of it and tried to make it all about politics too, and how it's apparently showing that it's just Joe Biden's incredibly stubborn, and that's what this is all indicating. And the dog's bloody rampage shows how stubborn Biden is.
You have to be the president to get away with having a dog who continually bites your stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like an 80s comedy where someone is someone in a space style. Dennis Quaid has been inserted into the body of a dog to assassinate the president.
It is a bit like that, definitely. Now, it's Friday, which means it's time for Fix a Headline. Hooray! This is the one and only Paper Cuts competition where we give you a great story with an ungreat headline and you lovely listeners think up a better one. And today we found you a story from the Daily Star in which it says that the National Trust plans to install wee poles, which is poles to wee on, rather than little poles, to protect to protect historic buildings and trees from dog urine. The headline, Pooch Piddle Poles Please, which is a bit of a mouthful. We think you can do better. In fact, we know it. Just send your excellent ideas to @PaperCutShow on Threads or Twitter with the hashtag FixTheHeadline and we'll choose a winner on Monday. There is a Paper Cuts t-shirt at stake. What about today? Have we got any better headlines than that, Jav?
So in the Star, there is a story about these swearing parrots. So the African greys, which are based up in Lincolnshire Wildlife Park, who just won't stop swearing. So there's 8 potty-mouthed African greys, and they've been introduced to a 92-bird flock of what they've called polite peckers there, which to stop them from swearing. But the issue is that people see the birds, think it's really funny that they swear, and swear at them to sort of egg them on. There's a really good quote here from Lincolnshire Wildlife Park's chief executive, Steve Nichols, who said, "We often hear people swearing at the parrots more so, in fact, than we do the parrots swearing at them. Visitors still get great joy from it." So it's all going a little bit wrong, and they've got the headline, "Oh, for flock's sake."
Perfect. I love those parrots.
On page 9 of the Star, rising cost of potatoes due to rain. So the chips are down for spud lovers due to rocketing cost of potatoes. Storms have left fields waterlogged, putting pressure on supplies and pushing up the price of chips, mash and roasties by more than 20%, apparently.
That's a lot.
That does feel like quite a lot. They've gone for the headline, Spuddy Hell.
So we've had two sweary headlines then. Mm. Very good.
And finally from me, page 23 of the Star. So a plane passenger was caught with dozens of rare live animals in his luggage, including Komodo dragons and deadly snakes. He was apprehended at check-in whilst trying to send his luggage to the cargo hold.
And we can guess the headline. Yeah, we can guess the headline right now.
They've gone for the headline, snakes not on a plane.
Okay, Ferg, what do you have?
Apparently, divorces have plummeted to their lowest level since 1971, and the reason is that it's too expensive to divorce. Mm. The headline in The Sun is Cost of Leaving Crisis.
That's quite a good one. I mean, sad, but a good one.
Sure. And another sad story with a good headline. Three Brits were injured when a wild party involving seven Thai sex workers turned into a knife battle in a row over payment.
Oh, my goodness.
I have an alibi. Yes, this happened in Thailand, I think, in Phuket. The headline is Thai Noon.
So bad taste, isn't it amazing?
It is bad taste, but...
Good headline.
Good headline.
Yeah.
And I learned from the Daily Star that, sadly, we are the least satisfied nation in the bedroom, which I take personal responsibility for. And the headline is, More Sex, Please, We're British.
Okay.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saida Varsi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves. The kind of things that people say don't touch, yeah. We are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, in The Independent, there is an interesting feature about Marlow Books, a lovely town to the west of London. Lucky Marlow is getting a Wetherspoons, but the residents are not happy. Our intern has been to Marlow, and he says that Gales is on the lower end of the coffee shops. That's just how posh it is. OK, so, Fergus, are the people of Marlow right to be unhappy about getting a spoons?
Well, Ryan Coogan has written a great comment piece about this in The Independent. It's a really enjoyable...
It's really funny, isn't it? It's a great piece.
It's funny. It's good. Ryan tells us that the people of Marlow feel that they're too good to have a Wetherspoons, that it'll attract the wrong kind of people to the town. But he points out that the idea that a pub will attract the wrong people to Marlow is very funny because it implies the existence of a scenario where somebody would travel to a Wetherspoons instead of simply going to one 2 minutes from their own house. Which is a good point.
It's a brilliant point, yeah.
And then I actually delved into the comments. Someone makes the point. I don't know if this is tongue-in-cheek or they mean it. Edmund, in the comments on The Independent, says, the idea of putting one of these establishments in a well-to-do area is not a new one. Take neighbouring Henley, for example. It gives the lower classes a place to be rather than clogging up other establishments and open spaces while they are not working.
Open spaces.
So one is able to enjoy the company of those in a similar station. I mean, that must be a joke.
I don't know.
Maybe not.
I
don't know. Marlow and Henley, you do kind of think, well, it really might not be a joke. So basically, yeah, the argument for the people in Marlow is it's okay. You can put all the plebs in one place and then walk past them. So, I mean, that's their argument, surely.
Yeah, that comment's made me viscerally angry to the point I really, really hope is satire, but it's nailed it. But exactly, you're not going to, if you're going to Spoons because it's really cheap, you're not going to pay to travel to go.
No,
that's just a false economy.
But it's so bananas. I'm from a really posh town, right, which is just outside, it's very nouveau riche, just outside Manchester, where all the footballers live. And I remember when they were going to put a McDonald's in there, we were really excited. We're teenagers. We were like, this is brilliant. We're going to get McDonald's. The arguments, I cannot tell you. They had to do the McDonald's kind of M. They had to tone it down. They had to agree to tone it down to fit in with the general vibe. And then there was another town even closer, and they just wouldn't have it at all. I mean, people, they got really upset about it. It's completely mad.
Some spoons can be vaguely posh as well, really. It all depends on what building they've decided to take over.
Very
they take
true.
Over some very sort of art deco cool buildings, which are quite nice. So, yeah. I mean, also, I don't know why I'm engaging with the idea that it's wrong that there's certain type
upset.
Of people who shouldn't go to the pub. Like, anyone can go to the fucking pub anyway. But I think just the people who go will be the people who, who live there anyway.
Yeah, there's a really brilliant bit. There's a bit in Ryan's speech, I think, is almost like poetry. He says, "We're all above Wetherspoons until we're not, until we're on a night out and we're too tired to party, but not tired enough to go home. Until we only have £6.53 left in our pocket, but still aren't quite drunk enough to feel like the night was worth it. Until we really, really can't be bothered with a Tinder date, but we already agreed and it's too late to cancel." That's beautiful. That is a beautiful piece of poetry about Wetherspoons. I've just got one more story to mention. It is a very sad story, so I hope you're going to be able to cope with it. It was in the Sun and the Mail yesterday, and it is about Papercut's favourite, Elsina K. Rover. I'm just going to explain to you two. But regular listeners know about Elsina. She is, basically a Russian socialite. She was once married to this massively rich diamond dealer called Dmitry Tsvetkov. And she used to live in a £22 million Surrey mansion. She's got a £1 million handbag collection. She's a lovely, happy single mother. She has been dating Tom Cruise secretly for a couple of months. But... And this is what a source, which we do agree is probably Elsina, has been telling the papers. There's been no evidence about this at all, because apparently when they go out, they've been in disguise. Just so you might have seen them, but you didn't know. Anyway, the news is, we're very sorry to say, that they split up. I know you're sad about this. Mm. You look very sad.
She sounds like the only person whose dating history could make it seem like going out with Tom Cruise is that you're going out with a fucking loser. she's gone down.
She dumped him. Yeah. She was like, oh, I don't know with it. Anyway, I've been very invested in this romance, if perhaps not everybody else in this room, because basically every time it appeared in the papers, it was from a source, and we know pretty much that it was Elsina, and we kind of suspect she might have imagined the whole thing. But anyway, apparently Tom is said to have cooled off the romance, but he wanted to remain friends with Elsina because they live in the same apartment block in London. And I kind of think, do they? Do they really? But anyway, apparently it would have been awkward if they bumped into each other in the lift. I think he may not live there. Anyway, it's okay. We checked her Instagram account and she was looking fabulous in a lace and silver gown and sniffing a really brilliant, well, it's actually gorgeous, actually, beautiful pink and white flower arrangement. And with the Instagram tag, the smell of spring is in the air. So we think she's going to be okay.
Do you ever think Tom Cruise would not be awkward in a lift? He's quite strange.
Yeah, just meeting him generally. Yeah. Anyway, so I was very invested in this romance and it's sadly over. But I'll continue to be invested in Elsina.
Perhaps I'm being prejudiced, but I always have this sense that Russians are sort of like about 20 years behind the culture. And that sort of adds up for someone deciding that their fake boyfriend is Tom Cruise. You know,
as opposed to Timothy Chalamet.
Yes, there are better options available.
And that's the end of today's Papercuts. Thanks to Jarv.
Thank you very much, Miranda.
And thanks to Ferg.
No, thank you.
And of course, thanks to you, lovely listeners, especially our Papercut supporters who get a shout out on every show. Jarv, who do you have?
It's hello and thank you so much to Rosie Callahan and MF Gilliam or MF Gilliam. I'm not sure if it's a soft or hard G or what, so you can get
either
both.
Way, the MF, the Muffles.
Yeah, I rate that.
And it's a hi from me and a you are fab to Az Richards and Penny Jules Bergeron. Mm. Would you have gone for that as a pronunciation?
I would have gone for Jules Bergeron.
Jules Bergeron.
Yeah.
So that's it. Subscribe to us and we will butcher your name.
It's hi and I've always loved you to Alice Sowerby and Ashley Boyle. No idea if that one was good. I've been Miranda Sawyer and you've been listening to Papercuts on a day when a mystery artist is being sought by police in Dartford after pillar boxes were spray painted to look like Mr. Blobby. Noel Edmonds is suing for copyright, of course. See you on Monday.
Papercuts was written and presented by Miranda Sawyer, with Fergus Craig and Jacob Jarvis. It was produced by Liam Tate and Adam Wright, edited by Robin Leeburn, with socials by Kieran Leslie. Our music's by Simon Williams, designed by Jim Parrott, and original art by Modern Toss. The group editor is Andrew Harrison, managing editor Jacob Jarvis, and executive producer Martin Boytosh. Papercuts is a Podmasters production.